Okay, thank you. And welcome. I think this is our fifth talk on this series on connection. And guess what it's going to be on? I've often wondered what integrity means. Not so much in the dictionary sense, because it's pretty easy to look it up, but in a personal sense. What do I mean by integrity? What does integrity mean for me? And what do others mean by integrity? And I wondered, you know, is it something we're more or less born with? Is it something we develop? Or is it something we're gifted at some point in our life? And I must admit, you know, kind of like the word dignity, I've often found myself not really sure what the characteristics or the qualities of integrity are. Although, I'm sure like all of us, I have a general idea of what I mean when I use the word. And yet, doesn't it seem a little bit like old-fashioned integrity? Kind of an old-fashioned word. We don't use it that much, but yet surely we all want our politicians and our leaders, our friends, the people we do business with, of course, to have integrity. But again, what is it? And what made it have to do with connection in the Buddhist tradition? So I dug into the history of the word a little bit. I kind of like doing that these days. And the word, the meaning of integrity, like generosity that I talked about a couple of weeks ago, has changed over time. In the 1400s, integrity had the meanings of innocence and blamelessness. Chastity, important word probably in the 1400s, more than today. Purity. And later it came to have the meaning of a wholeness or something that's in a perfect condition. It's a perfect condition. And still, it has this meaning to some extent, doesn't it? Because when we talk about the integrity of a wilderness region or ecosystem, we mean that it hasn't been altered by human development or the side effects of human development. It has a kind of integrity to it. Kind of is intact. Pure or whole as a place of wilderness. And the current meaning, when I looked it up in the dictionary of integrity, at least according to one dictionary, was a firm adherence to a code of especially moral or artistic principles and the quality of being honest. So then I asked myself, what is it to be a person of integrity? And considering the meanings of the word that we just heard, I'd like to suggest that it involves two kind of basic or two fundamental aspects. First, that integrity is a personal choice, a kind of more or less uncompromising and predictable commitment to honor or to live one's life by certain moral or ethical and spiritual values. So that's one meaning, right? Kind of, this is how I want to live my life, in this way. And the second is this idea of wholeness, a kind of a state of, I would say at first, an internal harmony or a kind of consistent character, that we have a sense of wholeness to our being. And I'm speaking of a kind of wholeness that comes from engaging over time in enough reflection to discover and to come to know deeply our own heart. To know deeply our own heart. In other words, knowing the fullness of our own being. So, A person of integrity or an act of integrity requires us to see deeply and with clarity our own nature and the situation of our lives. Resisting the pull to embrace self-serving views or select information that we really want in a difficult situation and rejecting information that we don't want. Integrity requires a consistency with what we know or believe to be right, like not to lie, not to cheat, for example, when it's our advantage to do so. A maturity of wholeness that reflects the values that we really deem to be so important for our life, like compassion, honesty, empathy, generosity, some of the things we've been talking about in the series. And as we all know, this is not easy. It's not easy to put down self-serving advantage. So I think to be a person of integrity really entails a kind of mindful self-discipline and a willingness to face off the strong lures of entitlement or expediency. Isn't that strong, you know? Oh, the traffic was really heavy. Sorry I'm late. When in fact, maybe you were watching, doing emails or, you know, caught up on a YouTube video. So we try to act with a kind of consistency with our values. But of course, acting with integrity doesn't mean that we're always going to be right because we act with integrity. Because even with a commitment to really bring forward a kind of integrity in our life, our actions might be misguided. There's no guarantee that these are the correct actions or the correct way to respond. So maybe one of the qualities that a person of integrity needs, in addition to the moral values, etc., is to also develop a kind of questioning. A questioning of those very long-held values and certainties, and cultivate also a willingness to adjust at times. Because with a certitude that includes inflexibility, that is rigid, really ends up resulting in disconnection rather than connection. And often, I think, in harm. I think most of us would agree that a life that's lived with integrity is a life of kind of constant striving towards a deeper understanding and expression of what is good and what is true. Of what is good and what is true. Really deepening our understanding, finding out what that is. So integrity, in this sense, is really a verb. It's a verb. It's not a noun. It's a process. I think a kind of unfolding rather than some kind of state that we're going to either be in or be out of. And I believe that this is the nature of integrity and its very importance. It's kind of like a Zen koan. You know those Zen koans, like what's the sound of one hand clapping and things like that? It's like a Zen koan in that there is no answer. No definite kind of, you know, open the book, page 49, third line down, there's the answer book. It's kind of a commitment an ongoing commitment, maybe a lifetime commitment and practice that leads our lives into a fullness that otherwise we will not have. So, how do we exercise or develop integrity? And how may it nurture connection with other people? Well, first maybe let's talk about this idea of how it might nurture connection with others. Why is integrity important? Well, if, as I mentioned earlier, integrity involves a kind of uncompromising and predictable kind of consistent commitment to honor our morals and our ethics, our spiritual values, then integrity gives a gift of trust. We can trust a person of integrity. We may not agree with them. We may not share all of their values. But we know that for our friend or our spouse or partner, that those values will guide his or her actions and speech. Their lives have a kind of transparency that reveals who they are and a steadiness of character that lends itself to trust. And of course, with trust comes peace of mind. So I think that's quite a gift and a way to foster and deepen our connection with others. And kind of connected to this, I think for both the person of integrity and for those around them, there is also a kind of fearlessness or a steadiness in those kind of gray areas of our life or gray situations where an appropriate action or an appropriate response is really not clear. You know, those kind of morally challenging, difficult times in our life, situations in our life that arise. Because integrity requires a commitment to spend the time and the energy to reflect rather than just kind of react. I think integrity gives us that as well. Third, are you counting? When we're around people of integrity, we see what is possible for our own life. And maybe this is the greatest gift of all. Perhaps it starts with admiration and some, of course, self-judgment of what we lack, but, you know, admiration of a person of integrity. But then seeing how someone else acts with integrity, I think that can encourage us. It can encourage us to consider what our own values are and maybe even find the courage to act in accord with them. When I was in my early 20s, I met someone of my own age who was a Baha'i. Does everyone know a Baha'i? That it's a faith, a religion, kind of connected with the Islamic tradition, but very open. So he was a practicing Baha'i. He had converted from a Catholic tradition. And we became really good friends quite quickly and ended up spending quite a bit of time hanging out together and also practicing martial arts together. I was struck over and over again by how truthful he was. He wasn't cruel in how he spoke truth. He didn't avoid, how can I put this? He wasn't cruel when he spoke truth about others or to others, but he didn't avoid the truth or try to dissemble to put himself in a better light. He didn't kind of massage the truth for some kind of self-serving need or to manipulate or to impress other people. And I was very impressed, because at that age, I was really concerned about what other people thought of me, even in trivial ways. And my integrity in this regard was kind of weak. But my friend, in demonstrating integrity, kind of opened up the possibility for me to face my own lack of forthrightness. I was and am very grateful to him for this gift that he gave me. So two aspects of integrity that I mentioned earlier, a kind of, you know, steady commitment to moral values and a wholeness of character, resonate with what's called the two wings of the Buddhist path, compassion and wisdom. The first teaching of the Buddha after he awoke is known as the turning of the wheel. And in that discourse, he spoke of the importance of moral values for oneself and for others. And in that teaching, he taught, as all of us know here, the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path, which emphasize, you know, clear ethical behavior, like right speech, right actions, right livelihood, and also a right attitude, which includes nurturing thoughts of goodwill, harmlessness, selflessness. And in our Soto tradition, our Soto Zen tradition, we study the precepts, kind of ethical guidelines, and we recite them every month, aligning with the tradition that started at the time of the Buddha. But of course, it's not enough to simply look at a list of moral values. I remember Zoketsu Norman Fisher, the Zen teacher who ordained Kate and me, saying that 90% of our practice, or was it 95? At any rate, 90-95% of our practice is to remember to do it. And perhaps the same could be said of integrity. Can we remember? Can we reaffirm our values? Honor, kind of honing our genuine moral insight, which hopefully is based on our experience, and then apply ourselves to really actualizing those values in our daily life. A large part of that practice is remembering to do so. Remembering what we have worked so hard to deeply understand and appreciate. We do this over and over again, remembering and applying, so that over time we be our values rather than struggling to hold on to them. Not easy, of course, but as the Japanese saying goes, Nanakorobi Yaoki. Fall down seven times, get up eight. Fall down seven times, get up eight. Nanakorobi Yaoki. To help us in this practice, our Buddhist tradition offers us vowing. to vow, to make a vow. Vowing is the practice of kind of, first of all, clarifying our intentions for this life, and then supporting them. Vows, in the sense that I'm talking about, go beyond measurable goals. They are inconceivable and paradoxical. The Mahayana school, the kind of stream of Buddhism that Zen comes out of, very early on recognized the power of boundless vows and created vows that celebrate and reflect this boundlessness in every way. And for example, the Bodhisattva vows that we recite here, beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Delusions are endless, I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable, I vow to become it. Delusions are endless, and I vow to end them. Can you see the paradoxical nature there? But that's the whole idea of a vow. The energy of a vow is created partly by this endlessness to it, its boundlessness. When we vow, whether before the Sangha, in a kind of a formal way, or in the quiet and solitude of our heart, we give ourselves completely to what matters most. So the vows we make begin as a deeply personal, deeply intimate beginning. And then through our commitment and practice, by renewing our vows over and over again, we bring them into the world. We bring them into our daily life. What are the bone-deep vows of my life? What are the bone-deep vows of my life? What shapes my moral compass? And how do I remember to renew my commitment? These are questions I think we need to ask ourselves. And to act upon. The second part of integrity, I suggested earlier, was kind of a wholeness, maybe a psychological wholeness, a kind of state of internal harmony. You know, over the years of practice, it gradually became clear to me that Zazen is not a technique. That our meditation practice we do here is not a technique for fixing Michael or improving Michael. But it's a practice of clear seeing and acceptance. Over time, that which we value about ourselves and that which we want to turn away from will all arise in Zazen, especially the stuff we want to turn away from for some reason. Seems lots of that. And to all of it in this practice, we say, and this too. And this too. Dogen Zenji, the Zen monk in the 1200s who first brought this stream of Zen practice from China to Japan, called this to study the self. To study the self in a very famous passage that he wrote. In this way, we acknowledge who we are. The good and the ugly. At least that's how we look at it at first. That's how I saw it at first. Thich Nhat Hanh, the Vietnamese Zen teacher, way back in 1982 at some kind of UN special session, read a poem. And here's this part of it. He wrote, "I'm a frog swimming happily in the clear water of a pond. I am the grass snake that silently feeds itself on the frog. I am the child in Uganda, all skin and bones. My legs as thin as bamboo sticks. And I am the arms merchant selling deadly weapons to Uganda." And the poem goes on in that vein. Everything we arises, we look up. We look at carefully. And now this. But our practice doesn't stop at a psychological wholeness, acknowledging both the light and the shadow side of who our character. In that same piece of writing by Dogen, he goes on to write that to study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be awakened by the 10,000 things. And when awakened by the 10,000 things, body and mind, as well as the body and mind of others, drop away. This is the boundless nature of integrity. The integrity, the integrity that the Buddhist tradition points us towards, that goes beyond the skin bag, as the Chinese call this body, the skin bag. Goes beyond this bag of water and bones. The integrity that the Buddhist tradition points us towards embraces others. It is a wholeness so inclusive that there are no definite boundaries. All the generations of teachers from the ancient past ask us to wake up to this profound connection, this kind of deep integrity that we have always had, and to see beyond the seeming boundaries of our skin and flesh. What is integrity? Good question. What is integrity? So I think I'll pause here.